the people want to say about the bill. So morning. I think we should start morning. Everybody who's here. Members, are you ready to start? Or there's still something that you want to make sure that you... Are we ready? I wanted that response. I don't think we're that hungry. So we need... So you are ready? No, I wanted you to talk loud. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I see we've got the department. Good morning, department, led by the DG. I don't know who are the other people that are sitting there, but whatever the reason why they are here, but you are welcome. You are welcome into this meeting. We are here about the National Health Amendment Bill, which seeks to amend the Health Act of 2003. And basically, this is just to empower the minister to establish an independent office of health standards compliance, which office we think that it will advise the minister on development and implementation of enforceable norms and standards and for quality and safety on the entire health system. That's why we thought it was important that we have this amendment. Now, there are people that we want to listen to who might be affected by this amendment. Now, what we are trying to do is to listen to their concerns or their suggestions. So we are about that today, and we're going to be here for probably the best of the day today. I think the first group that is going to be talking to us, last week, on Tuesday, we had a presentation by CYP, where I don't know whether he's here already. Is not around. So we thought we were going to start with him so that he could complete what he was doing. But unfortunately, I'm told that he's not around. So if he's not around, so when he comes, we'll try and fit him in. So we're going to go straight to the presentation by the Laboratory Medicine Group. I don't know where they are. Are they here already? Oh, okay. Welcome. Maybe let's tell you who is here so that you can know the Portfolio Committee for Health, because this bill is all about the Portfolio Committee for Health. So they'll introduce themselves to you, after which you'll introduce yourself. And I've said to you, we've got the Department of Health here led by the Director General. But we've asked them to keep quiet. And fortunately, Dr. Mashal is sick. Her voice is not working. I don't know whether there are no doctors in the Department of Health to help to recover. Okay, members, if you could just introduce yourselves.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Morosi Sekhaledi Swai, member of the Health Committee. Morning, everyone. My name is Rebecca Makosha Motsepe, member of this committee. Thank you.
Morning all, I'm Denise Robinson, and I'm also a member of this committee.
Morning everybody, my name is Molebogeng Grace Dube, member of this committee.
Good morning, my name is Thandi Wekenye, member of this committee, thank you.
Tell us who you are, and then you can go on and make your presentation.
Good morning, Honourable Chairman and Honourable Members of Parliament. I am Bruce Dietrich. I was a pathologist. I'm now retired and Chairman of the Laboratory Medicine Group, And with me is Dr. Karen Begg, who has got extensive experience in both public and private medicine, and she is the laboratory medicines group heads up the health policy working group.
You can go ahead.
The laboratory medicine group is composed of all groups which are involved in laboratory medicine. And as you can see, it represents the National Pathology Group, who are the private pathologists who've spoken, the National Health Laboratory Services, which is the state laboratory services. It also represents the South African National Blood Transfusion Services, the Western Province Blood Transfusion Services, SALDA, the South African Laboratory Distributors Association, the College of Medicine South Africa, the pathologists, the Federation of South African Society of Pathologists, Society of Medical and Laboratory Technologists of South Africa, the South African Society of Cytologists, and the Biomedical Scientists. In other words, it covers the whole spectrum of laboratory medicine. As you can see, laboratory medicine contributes a great deal to health in South Africa. As you can see, it does 153 million tests per year, and that is 30 million patients per year, and there are roughly 564 laboratories in the Republic. It employs more than 19,000 people. Now, what is laboratory medicine? When a patient gets sick, they go and see their clinician. The clinician usually makes a diagnosis. He can confirm this diagnosis if he wishes by doing some laboratory tests, and he can also, by doing some laboratory tests, see what is the optimal treatment for the patient. He then gives the patient treatment, and he monitors that treatment using the laboratory, and hopefully the patient then recovers quickly with very little morbidity. As you can see, 70% of clinical decisions in medicine are informed by laboratory medicine, and this figure comes from the National Health Service of the United Kingdom. In South Africa, only 2.5% of the total healthcare expenditure goes on laboratory medicine. It's not a great deal of money when you understand that laboratory medicine is the core to medicine. As you can see, it's very important that in laboratory medicine that the answers it gives are correct, because a correct result leads to a correct diagnosis, correct treatment, and the patient recovers quickly without morbidity or mortality, and it is cost effective. It is not a cost driver. If a laboratory test is wrong or inaccurate, it leads to the wrong diagnosis, the wrong treatment with severe consequences for the patient. So it is important that the laboratories try and make certain that as many tests as possible are accurate. And this is where accreditation comes in and standards compliance, which your committee is looking at. Karen?
Thank you, Honourable Members. I'm going to take over. So this was just really an introduction around laboratories and the aspects around quality in laboratories already. And we're going to flesh that out a little bit more. We also have a second presentation coming later from a pathology group, which I represent. So in terms of the Office for Health standards compliance and its applicability, the original National Health Act of 2003 indicates that the health establishment also includes laboratories. So it is not just what we would consider to be clinics, hospitals, etc., but it also is defined to include laboratories. But it does appear that the intent and design of the office and the core standards framework are designed primarily around clinical service delivery, so around clinics, hospitals, etc. But it's not necessarily designed around laboratories. However, laboratories are included in the definition of health establishments and therefore have to comply with this particular piece of legislation. What we really would like to get across today is that laboratories already lead in quality and have done so for a number of years, in that they have voluntarily submitted themselves to accreditation. Accreditation in the form in South Africa is done for medical laboratories through SANAS, which is, as you know, a statutory body through DTI legislation, and it uses International Standards Organization standards, ISO standards, in this particular case 15189, which is a very rigorous international benchmark standard. What that does is it allows the comparability of quality standards and also ensures the competence of a laboratory to perform designated tests through an external, authoritative, independent audit. Over the past 10 years, laboratory medicine have submitted themselves voluntarily to accreditation because, as we've just heard, it's imperative that we deliver the correct and reliable results. So 90% of private laboratories are already accredited under this legislation, under the ISO standard, and approximately 60% of NHLS academic labs are accredited, and 21% of their regional labs are accredited. What that means is that any result performed in these laboratories who are accredited is comparable to the same test performed anywhere else in the world using the same methodology. This ensures that patient safety is protected and that quality is ensured. So part of what we'd like to raise this morning is that we think that there may be some duplication and overlap, particularly with activity that is already happening and also with other pieces of legislation and regulatory authorities. So there are already existing standards governing health professional conduct and scope, such as for doctors, technicians, technologists, nurses, social workers, pharmacists, and some of those requirements, such as recording complaints, it's not clear from the legislation which would be supreme or which would be superior. So that would obviously be a concern that would be important to clarify. Likewise, that affects laboratories is medical devices and in vitro diagnostics, is that there's already legislation covering quality standards assessments there as well. And we'd obviously need to clarify which reigns supreme. Likewise, in terms of governing equipment, there's the South African Bureau of Standards, which governs much of the equipment in the laboratories that we serve, and also the to-be-commissioned national regulator for compulsory specifications. In terms of the office object and function, we're very comfortable that the office is looking at quality across the broad spectrum of health services, because it is imperative. However, we do see that the objectives include only monitoring, whereas the functions in Clause 79 include certification, complaints, and enforcement. And so we'd obviously want the two to be to make sure that if the functions include certification and enforcement, it must also be incorporated into the objectives of the office. Terms such as quality assurance and quality management systems are used very broadly and very widely in a number of different circumstances. And so these terms, it would be very valuable to have those very clearly defined in the legislation relating to the office, considering that they will be determining the standards around quality assurance and quality management systems. We also would like to see that the office, it is already established as a juristic person under Clause 77, but we'd like to see it as similar to the independent bodies such as the Council of Medical Schemes, the CETAs, et cetera, and as such be declared a Schedule 3 PFMA entity, given that it appears that the intention is for it to be financially sustainable and independent, and that would then guarantee fee retention as well as its independence and therefore and ensure the sustainability of the office. This is just a quick reminder that there are a number of quality terms that are bandied around that it would be really important to define, and these are the ISO definitions related to total quality management and quality assurance, but there are also other terms such as quality control and quality management systems which would need to be defined. So in summary, our recommendations are that we believe that we should avoid duplication given the limited resources of South Africa, and that we should really focus the resources that we have for this particular office on areas of health service delivery that are not currently covered by any other quality mandate or quality standard or accreditation or certification. So our suggestion is that a clause be inserted to allow exemption for health establishments, which would include laboratories, for instance, where they can demonstrate accreditation with a recognized legislated or statutory institution such as SANUS. So rather to spend those resources on facilities that are not already currently assessed or currently audited or currently accredited and to focus the resources there. We would also like the clarity around other legislation that governs standards so that it's very clear which legislation would reign supreme in any particular instance if conflict were to arise, and as I've indicated, to define the objectives and functions so that we harmonise between the objectives and functions and give the office its full mandate in its objectives. The terms need to be clarified and defined in terms of when we talk of quality management or quality assurance or quality control, that we're very clear on what we all mean by that. And then to ensure independence and guarantee revenue retention, that we suggest that it be defined as Schedule 3 PFMA entity in Clause 77. And I'll hand over to Dr. Dietrich to close.
Well, thank you very much for your time. In summary, we 100% support mandatory regulations to accredit all laboratories. This way, you will ensure that results are as accurate as possible. However, we do feel that where a laboratory is already accredited by a statutory body, it is exempt from the OHSC regulations. In other words, the laboratory is accredited by a statutory body, and all laboratories are accredited, and it is a statutory mandatory function. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Beck and Dr. Dietrich. Yeah, thank you very much for the presentation. Members, that is the presentation by the laboratory, the LMG. That's their presentation. I think what is coming out very clearly here is that they are not opposed to amending the bill. I mean the Act, the Health Act of 2003. But they've got some concerns on duplication of laws within the Department of Health, like the HPCSA Act, whatever it is. I'm not a legal person, but a legal protege who can help me. Within the department, and some are outside the department, like the SANAS, which is within DTI. So they're worried about those duplications because they could have other implications, and which one is going to be supreme over the other. The other, if I'm quoting very well, if I'm summarizing you well, the other one is the independence of the structure. So those are, I'm sure what we're going to be doing, we're going to be taking all their presentations and look at them later on. But I think if we want some clarity from them, it's the time for us to ask them those clarity questions while they're still here with us. Okay, remember, my home care. And then followed by municipalities. What would suggest probably, if you could just dot them down, the response that they're making, and then you respond to all of them.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, too, for the presentation. It was clear and it was concise and it was made a lot of sense to me. And I think while we're all so aware of financial constraints for areas which are not properly covered within our health system, it's important that we take note of your recommendation, that we don't duplicate unnecessarily. However, I just wondered whether you could explain to me what this guarantee revenue retention was. It came through in your other presentation as well, and I'd just like a bit more information about that, please.
Also, not being a legal person, but we will explain as we understand in lay, is that the Medicines Control Council is not defined.
Maybe that if you just allow them to. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. It should be clarified, really, in simple terms, because I see you said that you should avoid duplication. And another thing, eliminates conflict with other legislation. I didn't hear you well. Can it be clarified? What does that mean? Then when you talk about the independence, You gave an example, if I heard you well, of the medical scheme. I wanted to understand if, are you comparing this office and with the medical scheme? Because you talk about the independent. And I would, because this issue of independent, it has been coming with most of the presentation. I want to really understand, aren't we going to set a precedent, a precedency, whereby already there are bodies whom, like the South African Nursing Council, which is in a way doing quality and it's focusing on the nurses, how the nurses are doing. But I won't say that it is independent from the minister. The register is been appointed by the minister and he reports to the minister. Then I want, and it's not only it, even the others like MRC, aren't we going to put a precedent to be saying that now this thing we single out? Then another thing, because this committee is not like going to deal with laboratory alone or pharmacy alone or whatever, it's going to be dealing with a broad thing. And because you didn't say that, you didn't elaborate on the independence. What do you mean? And if maybe the independency is what I have been hearing, but you didn't come up here to be saying that it should be reported maybe direct to Parliament, that you are independent, mean that. Then if it, that is the case, what about, have you ever given it a thought of the skills or and the capacity of Parliament to be dealing with this thing? Because I am very much aware that there is a skill and the capacity when it reports to the minister. Thank you.
More hands, so you could respond to
this. Sorry, ma'am.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I wonder if on your recommendation, last page, you can further clarify for me bullet number one. I am saying so because as we are amending the Health Act, we are replacing Section 10 of the Health Act with the but we are replacing the Health Act, the Section 10. It's part of the Health Act. But if you can just explain to me clearly where SANAS features in the Health Act. Thank you.
Those are the questions, Doc. I think we'll just leave it to you to answer those questions.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll answer the first part, that is about SANAS and duplication. I cannot answer the rest about the health because my knowledge of that is absolutely negligible. But when it comes to laboratory medicine, laboratories need to be accredited so that the results are accurate. And in order to do this, you need to develop an accreditation system, and this has been developed internationally for many years and was developed in South Africa about 10 years ago by SANAS, the South African National Accreditation Systems. It was set up by the Department of Trade and Industry, and it accredits not only laboratories, it accredits all sorts of things, factories, food manufacturing. It's an accreditation system which has different numbers for different accreditations. There's a specific number and a specific requirements and standards to accredit laboratories. Now what we're saying is if a laboratory is SANUS accredited, which is a statutory body, then it could be exempt from being accredited again by the OHSC. In other words, the OHSC wouldn't have to set up its accreditation body to go and accredit laboratories. They could get SANUS to accredit laboratories. And that should be mandatory. All laboratories should be accredited to a correct standard. The other questions I'll have to pass on to Kieran.
Thank you very much for those questions, and I think we've been grappling with them ourselves, so thank you for those. I think just to add on perhaps to the last honourable member's question, which ties into what Dr. Deeks just answered around Section 10, what we're saying is that laboratories are included in the definition of national health of the National Health Act. The National Health Act, one of its first definitions is what constitutes a health establishment, and laboratories by definition are included. What we're suggesting is that laboratories have a special, have a unique set of requirements around their quality requirements. And the design and intent, from what we see of the Office for Health Standards Compliance, is primarily around clinical health establishments, which is appropriate. So what we're saying is that that's perfectly appropriate, and that is where we need to see most of the work happening. What we're saying is that there is already a body. Yes, it doesn't fall under the Department of Health, but there is already a statutory body that accredits laboratories for their unique set of circumstances that ensures reliability and correctness of laboratory testing. So that, I hope, answers that question. The second aspect, which is around the independence and fee retention, is perhaps I can answer on the fee retention side, is that organizations that have been declared Schedule 3 under the PFMA, such as SANUS, such as Council Medical Schemes, such as the Competition Commission, all, because of that declaration, in our lay understanding, are able to retain their fees, which means that they can be sustainable in their own right, that they're not, so they can continue, so from what we understand, the office design is that it would charge fees for rendering its service, and that those fees would then maintain, allow it to operate. Whereas, from what we understand, the Medicines Control Council was not defined as under Schedule 3 and has had difficulty in retaining some of that fee retention, which otherwise goes back straight to the general treasury income. So for that reason, that was one of our suggestions, that it actually be considered in the same way. So it was more to give it the ability to be sustainable and self-sufficient in its own right, so that it wouldn't continue to be a budget drain on a department, so that we could resource it appropriately and make sure that those resources could ensure that it continues to operate as it's designed. Then perhaps the conflict and duplication. Some examples, for instance, are that under Health Professions Act, a technician or technologist would be required to operate in a certain way based on their scope of practice under the Health Professions Council. And if a standard under the Office for Health Standards Compliance had a slightly different way of operating, so it was not, is that they would then be in conflict, that you could have one inspecting authority coming in and examining in one way, and we're kind of expecting the technologist then to be schizophrenic and operating then in a slightly different way and modifying that way, because we need to make it, the Office for Health Standard Compliance needs to be applicable to general health services. And it has been designed, as we can see, the intent appears to be that it has been designed for clinical services. And so we'll show you some examples just now in a later presentation around where there might be some challenges around ISO standards versus the current norms and standards that have been currently designed for the under the Office of Health Standards Compliance. So that might clarify some more the presentation after next. I think that deals with the questions that we've asked.
Thank you. I think what is coming out very clearly is that when we talk of duplication on the laws or the acts that have been passed, whether by the Department of Health or by other departments, is which law is going to be the supreme over the other. I think that's the question. If you are looking at the standards, and I'm a doctor in a hospital, and I start ill-treating patients, my attitude is a bad one, which is something that has gone to, or I remove the right leg instead of the left leg, where the SPCSA is supposed to. Should I talk into it? So who is going to have to be, because this talks about the quality of the health sector. But now at the same time, there's HPCSA that is supposed to follow me for what I've done. Where am I going to be challenged? But I think that's one. Then the other point, if something has been accredited, should it be accredited again because there's this new standard? I think those are the questions that are coming. But for us, we are not going to take any decisions here now, but we're going to consider what you're saying, because we are a government of the people, by the people, for the people. So hence we called you here, because there might be certain things that we overlooked, and those suggestions that you're putting up there, we're going to take them. But I must say, if there's something that says here in this bill that says the money is going to come from Parliament, And I don't think we can compete with MCC as MCC is now, because MCC is under the department. It's not an entity that is outside. So the money that they collect probably doesn't even go to DG, goes to National Treasury, and she doesn't know too what happens to that money, even herself. Whereas the CMS, which was put in by law, the cuts from medical aid, because when they collect their money from the medical aid industry, they use it for their own, and they've got their own structure that is under the CEO or the register, whatever you call it. So I thank you for the presentation that you've made. We're going to consider them. We're going to consider everybody. There's nothing that is stupid here, and nothing that is very brilliant, but we're going to take everything and consider it. As I said, we're the government of the people, by the people, for the people. So thank you very much, both doctors. I didn't see your handwriting. I hope your handwriting are not as bad as mine. But in any case, thank you very much. We've got to Swapiwe. There's something that was owing to Swapiwe. I think he's around now. So we'll give you a few minutes, Swapiwe. Because you were still answering. If you remember, members, if we could just recap on what was happening. So Apiwa was making his presentation. And there were two that day, but I see he's alone today. I don't know why he's alone today. Oh, why don't you sit next to him and support him? He needs the female support. Okay.
Sorry. Did I understand that they were going to do a second presentation? Is that part of this one or separate altogether? So you will be staying. Okay, thanks. I just wondered if they should finish before we deal with the PWEB, but if that's your ruling, that's fine. They're still going to be here. Thank you.
So, another person. Okay, if we can recap, I think they were making their presentation. If I remember well, their presentation was not against the amending the bill. They were accepting, but from what the presentation as it was going on, the main thing that they were worried about was that when the office has been set up, we should not do as things have been happening in the past, in the present government. I think that was the gist of his presentation, that there should be no corruption, there should be no nepotism, and the people who get employed there must be people. In fact, he went on to say that probably we should get people from the private sector, being employed from the private sector. I think that was the gist. And there were clarity questions that were asked, which he was asking, he was responding to. So if you could, in 10 minutes, Siwapiwe, respond to those questions, and we can move on.
Good morning to the House at large, and thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. At first, I would like to apologize for my time, which happens to be late. I was under the impression that we were supposed to begin at 10. I will try to be quick and succinct as I can so that I can fit all the answers to the 10 minutes. Just to give a brief of what were the questions and what they were around, and including to what the Chairperson has alluded to. I summarized them, and they came up to four main questions. The first one being, how best can we apply employment equity and affirmative action? And the second one being, why should we delegate the powers as per Section 79A1, that of where I suggested that the state delivers the powers from the minister and privatize them, where appointment of senior executive and more specifically the CEO and the Ombud are involved. And also, how can I say that while I suggest for privatization of such powers, then be saying we need to be economic savvy? How does economic sustainability come into play with that? And the last one, which was mostly anticipated to explore more clarities, was the issue of skills development experience, where I suggested that we should not be using employment equity and affirmative action as a mask against people who are suitably skilled for the offices. And the question there actually was that, knowing that there are people, most people, or in fact the designated groups, as the Employment Equity Act says, where the people who were disadvantaged in the past, how do we make sure then that they are no longer disadvantaged? Because they do not have skills that match their white counterparts, as the perception would comprise. Firstly, I want to bring a brief of the employment equity with its provisions, the affirmative action, where it speaks of the black people, it speaks of the black people as Africans, colored, and Indians, and it defines suitably qualified persons according to Section 23 and 24 as formally people with formal qualifications, with prior learning, with a relevant experience and capacity to acquire and the ability to do the job. And in our real South African experiences, where employment equity has been prioritized in most cases to the suitably qualified, it's always black as the African. And we always deviate from the provisions of the Skills Development Act 97 of 98. And we also tend to forget the constitutional provisions and Section 20 of the Employment Equity Act when the minister, as the previous bills would dictate, employs their executives. And as a result, the cost of doing such goes up, because at the end of the day, when things go wrong in the executive and in the administration, plenty of audits will have to follow those of the AGSA. Now, that means we're spending more money. That's where economic sustainability comes in. If we are going to have more audits after the work that has been done by the AGSA, then we are spending more than what we are supposed to be spending. Then in some cases, what follows is litigation, which is something we should avoid by all means as the state. And lastly, another appointment will be taking place in the very same term, where in cases whereby we had either expelled or given or relieved the person in office of duties for a certain period of time. And doing that also costs. So So what I wanted us to do and to understand when we work with this bill was that we should not place our minds in positions where we would treat this bill as if it would act as an isolated part of the law should it be passed into law. Saying that, we should make sure, therefore, that when it comes when it becomes passed into law, it does not interfere with our constitutional provisions. It does not interfere with the bad economic situation in which we are, and it also looks at the people's here speaking specifically of the Ombuds and the CEOs as brands. And when one looks at a brand like we do when we pick our consumable stuff from the supermarkets, we are always conscious of its reputation. That is one thing that we should also bring on board when we're considering the employment of our executive officer. We should do a background check. As I said that, I suggested that we delegate those powers and privatize them. I therefore also add that as well as Section 81, the appointment of health inspectors, as well as Section 81, the appointment of ombudsmen. The issue here is that if we are having people to inspect the processes and the administration of this department from this department, chances are we are not going to get the most honest answers at the end of the day. So when we get someone outside the department or the public health sector, or even more so outside the public sector, we are in a space where we stand chances of getting more honest answers, because there will be no political bias. Because in most cases where inspections have been done in public hospitals specifically, the politics of public office management always come as undertone of those reports that come out. So in order for us to avoid politicization of our administration, I think it's also best that we also take this outside the public health sector. Either we privatize them or we seek other departments to help us with the inspection of our public health services. And lastly, I would like to tap on mostly to the bridging of the skills gap, because we understand that most blacks were previously disadvantaged. As a result, they do not have the adequate skills in some cases, and in some cases they've got less qualifications than their white counterparts. Yet we cannot allow less skilled people to the most senior positions where they would not have sufficient clues and sufficient skills to manage those positions. Dealing with that, I believe that the minister in the Department of Higher Education and Training, Dr. Blade Nzimande, has once said earlier this year that we need to reinforce experiential training back into the universities. By doing that, we would be ensuring that at least one comes out with a degree and experience, not only with a qualification. Because in most of our public higher institutions, practical experience is not much of what we do in the universities. And our government, because we have to make sure that we live along the lines of employment equity, we would employ insufficiently skilled individuals to put up into those places. I think that suggestion that Dr. Nzimande made is much more crucial and should not only be considered within the Department of Education, but also across all public sector departments. I'm trying to work with time, you'll have to forgive me. And also, I think we should develop programs where we would design the culture of plowing back on our graduates. One thing that we should always remember is that most of our black graduates have gone through the tertiary education system using the state funds, specifically the National Skills Financial Aid Fund, the NSFAS. So if people use the state to get through, they should at least have a level of contributing back to the state. We should develop programs which speak to plowing back. I understand that by the close of the financial year, the previous financial year, the health department in the Eastern Cape and in KwaZulu-Natal have problems with taking back medical students or medical graduates who just left the universities, who did not want to go to the rural areas and practice from there, even though they were supported by the state and through using the state funds for their entire degrees. So if we do that and make sure that we strengthen that area and give the state more power to say, if we educate you, you should have a little... you should have a portion of your skills contributed back into the community. And when we do so, during that period of time, those people or those candidates would be able to get the experience which they did not have before they are taken up to the senior management positions.
Chairperson. Maybe on the point of order. I would like to check with us. Are we here to get a lecture of how government runs? Or we are busy with this the amendment.
Okay. Thanks. I think as maybe I've got to make a decision as the person who's sitting here. Well, the interest here would be to hear everybody, but sometimes the problem becomes time. But we have said we are giving him 10 minutes. Whatever he does with that 10 minutes, it's up to him. Let's just allow him the last 2 minutes to round up what he's saying, and then we go further. Okay, can you do that, sir?
Please bear with me. Maybe I'm out of order. I think if everybody can come here and lecture us and not concentrate on what we are here for, we are going to have a very fruitless meeting of... getting the comments about what we are here for. Can we say, please, we have listened, we have given him a chance, but the time is tight. I think these two members will leave before 1 o'clock.
Thank you, ma'am. I've got a belief that when we're talking about this bill, it has got far-reaching implications than just the bill itself. In fact, it's about uplifting the health system in South Africa. Not only that, it's actually improving the conditions of our people, which it goes beyond. So I'm begging you, members. I know we're going to leave it. Let's give him 2 minutes just to finish up, to round up. I'm begging you, members. Let's allow him to finish up whatever he's saying. But I don't think we can tell him what to say. But let him say, but in a specific time. Can you do that so quickly for us?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll just round up by saying that actually these are responses to questions of clarity to my prior submission. And lastly, the state in responding to the skills shortage and in responding to the lack of experience that our black people or black graduates have should develop, as I had said on Tuesday, should develop programs such as those employed by the private sector, programs which we refer to as graduate programs. In those programs, we make sure, or at least employers make sure, that the candidates go through the program progressively, being exposed to different aspects of whatever they are doing in their respective professions. That too can also be employed within the public health area, where before we employ our senior executives, we make sure that they understand exactly what is it that happens in the public health sector before they actually get into the executive administration level. Because one thing that is going to happen is that...
Now we are going to make me... The members are going to kill me now. Well, you said you're rounding up. I want you to round up before I fight with the members that I'm working with. Okay, round up.
Well, in view of that, say I would just release my statement right there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Swapiwe. I'm sorry, members, but we had to give him that time. But we have going to the next presenter, which is going to be innovator. Akemope.
I think what people must rest assured from the Department of Health, there is a program that is taking graduates down to the districts to do some work as a way of helping them to get there. So he must just rest assured. Maybe he will. He has to talk with the Department of Health, with the DG, about this program. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Wendy. So the next people that are going to be presented to us is Innovative Medicines of South Africa. I think you were here, so I don't have to reintroduce the members. So you know who's here. But before you go onto that, I think there are certain points that Usiwapiwe has raised. And I think it would be unfair of us not probably to leave him with some questions that he's not going to answer. Usiwapiwe, I think there's one thing that is always said, that health is a right. It's not a commodity. I think you're aware of that. Now, if it's a right, not a commodity, it's worrying if we're going to talk. I mean, those people that are given powers to govern this country want everybody, be it somebody who has money or doesn't have money, to have a good healthcare system. And if we're going to leave everything to the private healthcare sector, to the private hands, probably it might not help because the private sector is looking at the profit. Whereas those that are leading government, they want everybody to be healthy, to develop. And then it leaves us with questions in some of the things that you have said. When you're saying most of these things must be privatized, are we going to be able to help the poor if we privatize everything where they're going to be looking at profit? I know that we've got to work on the public-private partnership. That's the first point that I'm interested in. The second point, which we are very interested in, and I mentioned it that day, that, you know, if you say people must run from here to the circle down at the circle at Adderley Street, they must move from Parliament to there. But you take other people, you put them next to the hotel, nursing hotel there. You say all of them, they must start at the same time, but when they get there, number one will be number one. Yet the others started at nursing hotel, others started at Parliament. Obviously, you're unfair to those who started nursing hotel. And you expect, and you say, I mean, to give you a good example, I started my primary education until secondary at Tino School. Now, when I applied for medicine, I was supposed to compete with those people that were going to a better school in Cape Town. And I was expected to compete with them with my age. Is that fair? How do you bridge that gap? Is it fair to say somebody who's coming from Tino must compete with somebody who's coming from a best school in Cape Town for entry into the medical school? And the point that I'm trying to bring here is that in South Africa, we still have those problems that were brought by the apartheid. And how do we deal with them to make sure that even those that had no opportunity must be given an opportunity? Are we going to work on experience? If we're talking about experience, if I've just qualified and I'm supposed to get a job, but they say I don't have the experience, and I've never worked, and I compete with somebody who has been doing a lot of other things. Is it going to be fair that I don't get that job because I don't have experience? Have I been assessed whether I'm brilliant enough to do the job? I think these are the questions that we're asking ourselves, how to deal with them. If you could be helping us and saying, this is how we should do it, to make sure that that past that was bad is brought into the fore and is taken into consideration, because we are not playing at the same leveled field. So, and it needs to be corrected. So that those are some of the things. And here we're saying everybody agrees that the health indicators in South Africa are very bad, and we need to do something about them. And the department has thought that, look, if we amend the acts that we have, because they haven't helped us. They re-looked at the acts that were passed and we re-looked at them, but we said these are not helping us, but we need to make sure that we get people, we get to do so that we can change. And now we're doing something that we think is going to change things. It doesn't mean that it's the best. We don't know. It might be the worst one than the one that we had. But we can't predict the future. But all we have got to do is to be positive. As I said, that the future is a function of yesterday and today. If we are positive, it is going to be positive. But if we are negative, it is going to be negative. So we are trying to do something, having agreed that things are bad. We say, let's try and change the laws and the policies that we have so that we could move forward. I think it is a very difficult one. And I think the people who actually tried to kill apartheid were politicians who led us to say it is not right, it is not God-given, right, that certain people must be better than the other. Those were politicians. And it being them politicians, they still need to continue seeing to but obviously they're going to make mistakes. They're not God. They're going to make mistakes. But now to be killed for something that was done wrong in a particular area and brush everything that because so-and-so was employed without a skill, then it means the government that is there is totally wrong in everything. I don't think it's right. We should be specific about that person, that there's something wrong in that particular area, let's correct it. And if it gets corrected, we move. So those are some of the things that I'm asking questions myself, but maybe some other time we'd need to engage ourselves and talk about some of these things so that we can take South Africa forward. Let's give over to the innovative medicines and make that presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson, members of the committee, Department of Health officials, and other ladies and gentlemen present here today. My name is Shakira Ramlakhan. I come from Innovative Medicines SA, and we represent the following illustrated 14 research-based pharmaceutical manufacturers. IMSA commend the objective of the Department of Health in establishing the Office of Health Standards Compliance, and especially in achieving the quality imperative set out by the department. We see that the office intends accrediting all facilities, ensuring that there are standards and that there's proper clinical governance, that there's a proper process on dispensing and various other factors, and that there's the establishment of an ombudsperson. For every effective structure, one requires a proper foundation, walls, windows, a roof. The foundation of the OHSC is clearly stipulated by virtue of the objectives. However, an advisory and policy-making structure is also required, along with the mechanisms to ensure that the strict oversight function is guaranteed and transparency is maintained. IMSA therefore strongly advocates that for the Office of Health Standards Compliance to have various expert committees, advisory committees, policy structure committees to assist them in this function. As already stated by the previous speakers, the various councils, be it the Medicines Control Council, the Council of Medical Schemes, and the various professional councils, such as the Nursing Council, the Pharmacy Council, and Health Professions Council, are all empowered by the legislation stipulated on the left-hand side to set, enforce, and implement certain standards. I will echo the sentiments of the previous speakers in that IMSA also advocates that these standards that are already set by these councils be observed and taken into account by the office as you set your own standards. We also notice various areas of overlap and possible conflict. There is clearly a tension in the interpretation of the implementers and that of the public, who are guided by our legal counsel, who stipulate that there are now two laws, or multiple laws, one could argue, of equal standing that could lead to us entities facing two different and conflicting sets of requirements and enforcement. We'll also expand on this in the following few slides. I will give three big examples of where the overlaps may impact on specifically medicines, but also on the various professional councils and bodies. In example one, the core standards stipulated in the National Core Standards in Domain 3 is on clinical support services. This requires that the first leg, that a license for facilities to store dispensed medicines must be issued from the Pharmacy Council, MCC, or the Department of Health, as the case may be. We are supportive of this first leg. The second leg then states that this must be supervised by a qualified pharmacist. We have difficulty in this aspect, as legislation clearly prohibits pharmacists and doctors from working together in a practice. We are also advised that many public health facilities do not have a post for a qualified pharmacist. The implication in this is that amendments must occur to existing law to enable multidisciplinary practices. We've seen by virtue of the NHI documents and various other public statements from the government and NHI that multidisciplinary practices are envisaged for the NHI going forward. Perhaps this and various other laws must be properly aligned in order for this to occur. An alternate, if amendment is not approved, is to establish an exemption application process. This was advocated by the previous speakers as well. And this would obviously be a much quicker process and easier to implement going forward, and then perhaps amendments may occur later on. We are supportive of multidisciplinary practices. My second example is on core standards for stock controls. The core standards stipulate that medicines must be in stock and delivered, and that stock levels are to be prescribed. We see a clear conflict with the Pharmacy Council, who also set and enforce detailed medicines control criteria. They have inspections, and they make a pharmacist and a responsible pharmacist as the responsible person for oversight functions. And there are very specific functions that the responsible pharmacist must carry out for accreditation. We see here that as these standards are more stringent, a mechanism or a remedy available would be for the Office of Health Standards Compliance to refer to these pharmacy practice rules and, in general, all other applicable rules and guidelines setting standards that may be more stringent in their application to ensure quality. My final example is on the core standards regarding medicines to be prescribed in accordance with treatment guidelines. When referring to treatment guidelines, we advocate that this needs to be clearly and explicitly stated. We have in the public sector the essential drugs list, which have treatment guidelines attached to them. However, the private sector are currently, through the Council for Medical Schemes, busy with a prescribed minimum benefit definition project, and there are no national consensus treatment guidelines in South Africa to date. We also ask that what happens with a patient who has an adverse drug reaction to a medicine that is prescribed in terms of this treatment guidelines? Those guidelines need to clearly stipulate how this should be managed. That is, who will define what occurs, such as experts in the field, how this is to be evaluated, etc. And we would refer to the medical schemes legislation in this regard, which would help to define this, as they have very specific criteria in this regard. Finally, we also note that there's a reference to the National Coordinating Center for Clinical Excellence that's contained in the Human Resources for Health Strategy document. We would like to ask how this is to be linked to the Office of Health Standards Compliance. More detail must be provided in order to ensure efficiency, transparency, and continuity of the process. Finally, we just have the following proposed solutions. We would like, in order for the ensuring of transparency, that they be published for public comment standards before they be finalized. We also wish that enforcement efforts by the office and the various professional councils speak to each other, that all councils support each other and consultation occurs to ensure that there is proper alignment. We also, as I mentioned to begin with, advocate for the establishment of expert advisory committees that the office may refer to for guidance and assistance. Thank you.
Thank you. I nearly said Dr. Ramlaka. You know Dr. Vijay Ramlaka? I used to be schooling with him. He was one of the brilliant people that I know. Thank you very much. Members, that is, it's almost the same talking about the conflicting requirements, the alignment. These are some of the suggestions that they are making to the bill. Any questions of clarity? I see Honorable Nomo, Honorable Kenya, Honorable Dube.
Don't you think that some of the areas that you have mentioned might be covered in the regulation? Because if we were to add all these things into the Act, it would end up becoming a bit cumbersome. And seeing that there is so much overlap, maybe the regulations can also look into some of the areas. Thank you.
Thank you, Chebasi. Thank you for the presentation. I have only two questions to ask. The one, as you know, that Section 79 talks about the establishment of Office of Health Standards Compliance. Now, it is not clear to me whether you want to phrase to the whole Section 79 to be rephrased, or as you know that the section deals with ABCD, to my understanding, where we are talking about the appointment of the CEO and the functions thereof on 79B, and also on delegation of powers and assignment by the CEO on Section 79C, also on the issue of accountability and reporting by the CEO when we're talking about 79D. So the reason why I'm asking that is that now it is not clear whether you need all of them, all the ABCDs, or you just have one section, section to be changed under that section 79. Secondly, as you talk about the conflicts, and then say that it could lead to entities facing two different conflicting sets, do you think that which entities do you think are very highly affected? If so, I don't know. If so, which one of the entities do you think they are really conflict? And if so, how do you think it can be rectified? Thank you.
Chairperson, mine is just a clarity-seeking question on page 2, proposed solutions, the last bullet. Can you please elaborate more, because I don't understand when you say the establishment of expert committees to guide. Are you saying outside the, or please?
Thank you. Those are the clarity questions. Welcome, Honorable Dudley. Welcome. Okay.
On the first question, regarding the regulations, yes, we agree that some detail must be contained in the regulations. However, in the manner that the bill is currently drafted, there are areas that appear quite vague, and this will be all-encompassing and all-reaching if not curtailed. It needs to be further shortened, further defined for efficiency and purposes, also going forward to ensure continuity when there's a changeover of the executive, of the chief executive officer. If these processes don't continue on with clear clarity from the act themselves that empower the regulations, we will get into interpretive difficulties. Does that answer your question? Thank you. On the second question about Section 79, we are advocating only for the portion in Section 79E that refers to harmonization to be rephrased. We believe that that reference there to harmonization is not in keeping with the law, as these are two laws of equal standing, or multiple laws as compared to the Office of Health Standards Compliance Laws, compared to the various laws of the subordinate legislation made in terms of the Pharmacy Act, in terms of the Medicines Act, etc. Those laws are of equal standing, and one law cannot override or supersede another. And the function to decide who or what aspects of which law should override each other cannot be done by the executive. We're also asking in that rephrasing for acceptance of the certificates of compliance issued by the various councils on specific standards only, and guided by, for example, the time limits on those certificates as issued. Okay. On question three, which entities in terms of the conflicts, we would argue that it applies to all councils and professional bodies that have set standards and are trying to implement and enforce those standards. There would be various conflicts. I've mentioned the one conflict with the Pharmacy Council and the speakers before me, and I'm sure various speakers that will come after me will speak to their various conflicts in the councils that they represent or the professional bodies from which they come. On the last question, on the establishment of the expert committees, we actually advocate for that to be an internal expert committee within the Office of Health Standards Compliance that they may refer to. Members of it could be from the various professional councils who are setting these standards that could assist the council with what has happened, the processes that occurred with setting those standards. So there's no duplication of efforts, and we're not reinventing the wheel. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Those were the responses. I think we'll probably pass on. But what must be clear is that we're amending a law here, and we don't know whether it is going to work or it is not going to work. But what is driving us is that we want to better the lives of our people. That's the bottom line. We want to make our people to have better lives and improve our health indicators as they are. Whether we're moving the right direction or not, but as long as we keep that focus, that this is what we want to do, be it private, be it public, all of us must be concentrating on that. And sometimes you always think that if we remain on that focus, we'll be able to handle any question that might come, as long as we agree that all of us, we've got to work towards making our people healthier than they are today. Members, can we move on? Okay, Ms. Khalid.
Chair, I just want, maybe I'm becoming a bit confused. My understanding is the office will be not setting their own standard. They will be following the standard according to the professional body's standard. Therefore, I'm a bit confused where we always talk about conflicting, there will be a conflict. Like, for instance, I'm just going to give an example of the South African Nursing Council, which have its standard and the scope of practice of their professionals. Now, according to this office, which is stated in the bill, they are going to be, we are going to be looking at those standards which have been set, or what is supposed to happen from different professionals are being put into for quality, because all these other professional bodies are quality orientated. Now we are having this one body which will be looking at the implementation of all professional bodies. That is why I'm a bit confused, because of this thing of there will be a conflict, as though the office will be coming with its own scope of practice.
I don't think you, Dr. Ramblagan, you don't need to answer that one, but maybe let me make this comment, that we are doing something that we don't know, but we know where we want to go. Now, knowing where we want to go, there are laws that have been there, like your professional bodies. I think their worry on their side is that if I perform an operation, like I saw yesterday on cutting edge, that a doctor cut somebody's bladder and that person had a VVF, what do you do? Because that person was lying in a hospital and now has got a VVF. You tell me, my dear. Okay, I should not have used acronyms, Matthew. I think this lady was having an operation where they were removing the uterus. But they actually cut the bladder. Now, she can't control her urine. There's a connection between the bladder and the vagina. So the urine is always leaking. And I saw her on TV. It was just interesting. I just picked up that. I just saw it. And it was done by a doctor in a particular hospital. Now, the Health Professions Council is supposed to come in because the quality of that doctor is questionable. That's their question now. Who is going to come in? Is it going to be the Office of Standards? Who's going to be supreme? Is it going to be the Office of Standards? Or is it going to be the Health Professions Council? Who will be the last one to say, this is what is it? But if we are all focused on one thing that is better than the lives of the people, it shouldn't really worry us. But the problem is that whoever is, I don't want to put it in a very simplistic way, but the laws that are there have helped us in one way, but we still needed this law that is going to be covering all the things, because with those laws that we have been having, we still continue to have problems in South Africa. So the department and the portfolio committee thought that if we can have another thing that is going to help these other laws, probably we'll get where we want to get, because we still have a lot of problems. I think it's on that basis that we're having this. So maybe though we're going to take everything, as we'll consider everything that you've put in, but we look as to where do we want to go and make sure that we put them together. We look at all the other laws that have been there. I see you.
No, I just say that I understand, and that's my view. That is why I wanted them, maybe the chair, to tell us what do they make to explain to me. Because I'm having it the very same way you are having, to be saying what I just explained. But I didn't want chair to do it, please.
They say in Xhosa, ungamkhonyela. No, but I think they are right, because sometimes, still I wouldn't like you to answer, but if you want to answer, you can answer. But I think the problem is, what they are envisaging is that when the chips are down, People use every other little thing to fight. They would use something that is not supposed to use. Maybe you can come in. I think that is the basis, that in case there are problems, they will try and use every little act that they know to fight so that they are found to be right. I think this is what they are talking
about. Chair, for the professions, what we're trying to say is there can be only one set of standards. When it comes down to this, we need to know which standards to follow. And if it's it becomes an interpretation issue, and then we have to bring in the legal fraternity to help us to decide which of the sets of standards do we comply with. Is it the standards of the Office of Health Standards Compliance? Is it of the various professional councils? Who do we comply with? And when that occurs, and then there's these various interpretational issues, what's going to happen is the professionals are the ones that will suffer at the end of the day, and from that, the patients.
Thank you very much. I think let's step off this point, and let's go to the next presentation. But what we should be clear about is that when chips are down, people use every other little thing. But if we're talking one thing, that we want to better the lives of our people, the standards are going to be the same. It's going to be different domains that we're going to be talking about. Thank you very much, Dr. Ramlaga. Okay, can we go to the next one? Okay. It's Kevin Upake. Pathological. Is it pathological? Okay. Maybe members, with everybody here, we were trying to rejuvenate people by having tea so that they can have a little bit of caffeine in their blood. I'm not sure whether, while you're putting up your slides, people could have a 10-minute tea so that you could be rejuvenated. Welcome, Free State. Welcome, Free State. Comfort break is more better term.